This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Imran Khan, famous cricketer, former prime minister of Pakistan, is on a campaign to reclaim his office. However, his presentation requires explanation because it is not the people of Pakistan who rejected his government. It is the United States and its villainous allies in Islamabad, I believe. But I'm checking up with Sadanand Dume of the American Enterprise Institute, who writes for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Sadanand, Imran Khan is world famous as an athlete. At the same time, ever since he was turned out of office by the people of Pakistan, he lost the majority, lost the confidence of the legislature. He's been campaigning to recapture in an unusual fashion. I believe he wants he wants an election now, and he accuses his opponents of being in league with the United States. Do I say that correctly? Good evening to you.
Yes, good evening, John. I think that some people would quibble about whether he was turned out by the people or whether he was turned out, as you correctly said, by the legislature. So what happened in a nutshell was that he had a slender majority along with allies in parliament. He lost that majority and he lost his job, which is what happens in a parliamentary system. The true story is that he had a falling out with the most powerful person in Pakistan, who was the army chief. His name was General Bajwa. Bajwa and Khan were at loggerheads with each other. As is usually the case in Pakistan, the army chief prevailed. But because it's much easier to blame America than it is to blame the army or to blame the army solely, Imran Khan has made the claim that he was turfed out of office because he was a brave and principled Islamic leader who was standing up to the United States, and therefore the United States got rid of him, which is not the case, but that's the story he's been telling his people.
Strange language. He says that Pakistan is a slave nation. What does he mean by that?
Well, he says this over and over. He says that Pakistan is a slave nation and its master is the United States. And he believes that the U.S. has dictated policy to Pakistan and has used Pakistan, in his words, as a tissue paper to be used and discarded like a Kleenex. This is very emotive language. It plays very well with his supporters because there's a lot of anti-American sentiment in Pakistan. But essentially what he's arguing is that Pakistan has not enjoyed genuine foreign policy autonomy because it's corrupt leadership, both civilian and military, has been basically in hock to the U.S. government, and they don't make independent policy. They just do whatever the U.S. says. That's his charge.
That is not historically accurate, of course, and I'm presuming that his supporters paper over that, but let's fill in the details. Pakistan is no slave of the United States. In fact, over these 20 years, I've learned that Pakistan is quite independent of the will of the United States when it comes to the jihadists of Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda, and other misrepresentations of history by Imran Khan. Does that weigh on this matter that far from obeying the United States, Pakistan has been through many governments defiant of the United States?
Yeah, in fact, Pakistani governments have done, dating back at least to the Zia era in the 1970s, if not earlier, is that they have taken aid and they've taken sort of financial benefits from the United States, but they've always pursued the policies that suited them best. And three big examples come to mind. The first is that Pakistan is very close to China, and it's been very close to China for a long time. And as early as the 1950s, the U.S. was trying to persuade Pakistan not to maintain that kind of close relationship with China. Pakistan ignored the U.S. The U.S. obviously did not like the idea of Pakistan acquiring a nuclear bomb. Again, Pakistan, while professing to be a close ally of the United States, went ahead and clandestinely pursued a nuclear weapons program and got the bomb. And the most famous example for most of your listeners is the one you just mentioned, that after 9/11, Pakistan again pretended to be an ally of the U.S. in the war on terror, but in fact it continued to aid and abet the Taliban, which led to the defeat of the U.S. and NATO in Afghanistan. So they have never really followed U.S. policy. They've done what they've regarded to be in their interest, or at least what the military has regarded to be in its own interest. So this whole charge of it that Pakistan has acted as a slave nation is nonsense. And it's retired Pakistani diplomats who in fact admit this or say this quite candidly and proudly on Pakistani television.
At the same time, Khan has a writ against India. It's difficult to sort this out as a formula, but in some fashion, he's saying that India is treated differently than Pakistan. It is a member of the Quad, Japan, Australia, the U.S., and it is an ally of the United States. So what is his plaint? Is this to feed the nationalist beast in Pakistan? Is that why he says this?
It's kind of ironic because when he was prime minister, relations between Pakistan and India declined quite precipitously. Khan is a very fierce critic of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. But in his rallies, he doesn't attack India. He compliments India. And what he says is, which is really quite unusual for a Pakistani leader, he says, we should be, by we he means Pakistan should be more like India. I mean, there was one rally where he, in fact, played a clip of the Indian foreign minister and talking about, you know, Indian oil imports from Russia or something. And Khan's basic point is that India has a close relationship with the United States. At the same time, India continues to maintain ties with the Russians. More specifically, he talks about how India purchases oil from the Russians, whereas he thinks that Pakistan does not have that freedom to purchase oil from the Russians. And that is true enough. It is true that India is buying oil from Russia. In fact, India is buying very large amounts of oil from Russia since the outbreak of the conflict in the Ukraine. But what Khan doesn't seem to understand is that India has that autonomy to both buy oil from Russia and maintain close relations with the U.S. and the Quad for two reasons. First, India and the U.S. are both concerned about the rise of China. Now, you and I have talked about this numerous times, John. And the second reason is that India has an economy that's more than 9 times larger than Pakistan's. So, you know, when you have an economy that is more than $3 trillion, you have a little bit more wiggle room on the international stage.
Khan's objective is to regain the prime ministership. I understand that. And he's using what we call populism in this country. Is it successful? Are we looking at him using a core of supporters and these rallies outside as a way of demonstrating his popularity as opposed to the real thing?
It's a great question, John, and I don't think anyone really has an answer. Now, when Khan first came to power in 2018, there was a widely held view in Pakistan and among Pakistan watchers that it was an engineered victory. He had the army in his camp. The army arranged for defectors to join him. The army browbeat and intimidated his opponents. And they essentially turfed out the earlier Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif from office. So the question really is, can Khan reclaim power without the army by his side? One group of people say that, no, he can't. He was a creation of the military. He has an element of support, but it's mostly middle class and in the cities. He's not a mass leader. And then there's another school of thought, which is Khan supporters, who say that, in fact, his support base has grown dramatically over the last 4 years, and particularly over the last 6 months, since he's been floating this conspiracy theory about the U.S. And if there were a free and fair election tomorrow, Khan would, in fact, come back and be reelected as prime minister. So I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know which one of these is true. But those are the two contending views of Khan's future.
The prime minister is Shahbaz Sharif. His government is weighed down by the catastrophe of the flooding. A third of the country, a third of the population without adequate resources, the land damaged badly, starvation in the land, Pakistan needing a great deal of support. Is this helping Khan or hurting Khan's support?
It's helping Khan enormously. Now, Shahbaz Sharif, who used to have a reputation for being a good administrator, when he was chief minister of Punjab province, which is the largest province in Pakistan, he's been kind of rudderless as a prime minister. It's not clear where ultimate authority lies. Does it lie with Shahbaz Sharif, or does it lie with his older brother Nawaz Sharif, who lives in London? There's all kinds of sort of questions about who in the next generation of the family is the main contender or the heir apparent for power. And as a result of all of these things, in general, it's been a lackluster administration. And this has really helped Imran, because instead of stepping up and being competent and putting the economy back on track, the Shahbaz Sharif government has been quite rudderless. And Imran Khan is making the most of this.
And Imran Khan right now, and he continues to defy the government, does that grow his numbers in any fashion? Can he demonstrate that he's more popular now than when he began his campaign? We have about 30 seconds.
I think he can. He's attracting large crowds, and more importantly, he's winning by-elections, which are kind of special elections held on the side for vacated seats in legislatures. He's been doing very well, and that's proof that I think his popularity does seem to be growing.
Sadanan Dume of the Wall Street Journal editorial page. He writes a column on the subcontinent. And Imran Khan right now is the subcontinent's hottest news. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.